Welcome to another episode of the RAG podcast. And for those of you who don't know, the RAG stands for Recruitment Agency Growth. Since early 2019, I've been interviewing the most successful and innovative recruitment owners to learn how they rose to the top of their game. In season seven, I'm going to be having raw, authentic, and insightful conversations with agency owners, entrepreneurs, leaders, people across the industry. And I want to be learning about their ambitions, what's happening behind the scenes in their agencies today, and their plans to navigate difficult market conditions. I'll be bringing you the latest and greatest recruitment stories every single week on Wednesdays at noon across multiple platforms. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the RAG podcast. On this week's show, I'm joined by Jake Fraser, the CEO and founder of Precision Talent Solutions, a specialist government contracting executive search firm. Jake is actually based in Switzerland, but the company is based out of 12 countries internationally. They have over 35 people, and they recruit specifically in the world that Jake and the whole team used to work. So they've got this interesting business where the whole engine room of the company is ex-industry. They hire senior people from industry and convert them to headhunters. So they're completely flipping the script. They've not got this graduate trainee model. They go after senior people in the industry who've already got the scars, the stories, and the network and convert them into high-performing recruiters. So in this episode, we talk about the model, how he's got to falling into owning a recruitment firm, having scaled and exited a government contracting business, and why and how they've executed this unique talent model. Take notes. You're going to need it. He's so calm. He's so intelligent, Jake. He doesn't speak quickly. You got to digest what he's saying, but there'll be some real nuggets of information for you in this one. Without further ado, Jake, welcome to the RAG podcast.
All right, Sean, thanks for welcoming me here. It's good to spend some time on the RAG with you.
Awesome, mate. I love it. And where are you? Tell us where you're coming in from today.
I'm calling in live out of Lucerne, Switzerland on a sunny day.
Switzerland on a beautiful day. Yeah. I'm in Sheffield on a beautiful day, which is nowhere near as glamorous, but it's not too bad today. Not too bad today. Jake, yeah. It's been something we spoke about a while ago. We got you on finally. I'm excited to have you on the show.
Yeah, great.
Your branding in the background, you're telling everyone like me, the name of your company above your head. For anyone who doesn't know you, do us a brief intro to you today. So I just want to know what the company does, where you're based, how many people, that kind of stuff. And then we're going to go back and tell the whole story, okay?
All right. Before I get started, let me give a shout out to Greg Savage.
Sure.
Greg's a mentor, something we've all read the book, and actually had him join us for like a book club where I thought he was going to come in for 5 minutes. He spent about an hour and a half preaching at us. It was awesome.
Wow. But
that's how I met you, is through Greg.
It's true.
In fact, I asked Greg, I said, what do you think about Hoax? So he said, do it. I'm glad I did it. Glad to meet you. So I actually met you through this podcast with Greg Savage. So
wow, that was a while ago, about a year ago, I think.
Yeah, I was in the gym. I was like, "What's this? Who's Greg talking to?" No, it's good. Yeah, great to be here, Sean. I really like what you're doing for the recruiting industry. Really excited about the social selling, the personal branding, everything we're doing with Hoax. So thanks for that. I'm not a digital native. I graduated from university without owning a computer. You had to go to the computer lab in order to write your papers or whatever. So I had to figure a lot of this out on the go. I grew up kind of an expat. Father was in the military, moving around. And I found myself also in the military back in the mid-90s. I was stationed in Germany, went down to Bosnia right after the war in a peacekeeping function, which was actually pretty good in retrospect. And I was down in Bosnia, young second lieutenant, and was receiving services from these contractors out on the battlefield, if you will. And I don't know, I decided that's what I wanted to do. Went back to Germany, finished up, and got out of the Army in 99, and went back to the Balkans and worked as a contractor, as a government contractor, which was really cool. I was in Hungary, 25 years old, the world in front of me, and learning the industry from the ground up after having been a customer.
Right, so let's pause on that. So just to clarify, today you run a recruitment firm called Precision Talent Solutions. What do you guys specialize in?
We specialize in government contracting talent.
Right. So that's where we need to start. So you literally recruit the world you used to work in, and you got into that world from becoming in the, you got into the military.
That's right. Yeah.
So where did you grow up? Were you all over, but in the US?
I was in Germany a couple of times as a kid.
Really?
Played on a German football league, lived back in the States in Tennessee. I call home, went to school in Nashville. So really lived bouncing around.
So Europe was a consistent theme of yours, it like, yeah, always coming to Europe. Yeah.
It was always like my destiny to get back to Europe.
Because in a lot of Americans, they, you know, Europe's this big thing that like they've never even seen, right? And you spent your childhood bouncing over the water. And... Yeah.
I think I spent 33 years outside the U.S. So living as an expat, or I married a European, my wife is Hungarian, my kids are all, they have 3 passports. I don't know if you're allowed to have those, that many, but we're an international family, but I'm still an American. I can't help it. You know?
So what got you into the military then? Other than the fact your dad was in the military, why did you choose to do it?
Well, he said, you better find a scholarship or you're going to live at home and go to the local community college. So I got an Army scholarship and they pick up the tab. That's the way it works. And I didn't really realize it, that they're going to take a chunk out of my butt when I graduated from university in terms of going out and living in a tent for a year. But it's okay. It's all right.
So you didn't want to do what your dad said. So what was the first, I suppose, role in the military that you chose to take?
I was a scout team leader. We were cavalry unit, so we were on tanks and Bradleys, and we parked our stuff on a checkpoint in the middle of nowhere in Bosnia to keep the Serbs and the Bosnians from killing one another, and basically just sit out there and watch cars go by. So it was great. Didn't have to shoot anybody. Didn't have to do anything bad.
Did you not fear your own life at any point? Was you not scared of like being there?
It was just a job. You're trained, you know. But you like food. You like a hot shower. All these things that the Army didn't give you, and the contractors brought it to us. And I always thought that was such a cool way to.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, you show up on a tank. A tank doesn't have a shower on it.
Right.
Doesn't have hot chicken. When you're out of the middle of nowhere, you want a shower and you want some hot chicken. And the Army hires these contractors that do all the life support for the soldiers. And
frankly,
I thought I could do more for the soldiers as a contractor than as an officer.
So would they be like a catering contractor or something?
A catering contractor. Yeah, there's the more and more so, I think the government, the militaries are contracting out all the non-core functions, logistics, supply chain, construction, engineering, all that's done normally by the private sector.
And is it all local? Like if you're in Bosnia, it's a local firm that you'll be working with?
I was working with a publicly traded at the time. It was a subsidiary of Halliburton, which was a bad name at the time because of Dick Cheney. But it's a company now, Kellogg Brown & Root. They're very prominent in the UK, very prominent around the world, but big publicly traded company.
Right. So you get to the end of your time on the military and you decide you wanted to work as a contractor. So you say, how do you come to that conclusion? That's what you want to do just because there's these people helping you out. Like that's a really interesting way of looking at it.
My life's been driven by geography a lot, and I just didn't want to go back to the States. I wanted to stay overseas, and it was either go be a bartender in Kitzbühel, Austria, or go make money and work as a contractor. So I picked the second one.
So how did you get that job?
I ran into a guy. He asked me, he was a retired colonel. He was the theater planner, Don Ellis. I still play golf with him every summer. Don said, do you have a resume on you? I was like, I do right here. He's like, all right, LT, there's going to be someone from HR that's going to call you tomorrow and get you a job. I was like, sure, whatever. Let's go. So I just started working.
What was the name of that organization?
Brown & Root.
Right. And they're big. They provided what levels, different services did they provide?
Everything. They did everything from running the flight lines, the transportation, the mail room, the dining facilities, cleaning the toilets, building, doing construction. I mean, everything for the military. It was
just for the U.S., for different armies and different.
Well, they support the U.K. military all over the world.
Right.
Very prominent contractor.
Wow. And your job for them was what?
I ran the transportation, the trucking. Like, I didn't know anything about trucking. I just had to figure it out. We ran a really cool closed-loop Pony Express system across Europe. My last job, I had a clearance, like a security clearance, so I could do classified stuff. And I was the theater command group liaison officer. So I would go in and talk to the general and his staff, and they would be using me for planning because they basically needed the company to do everything operationally that they were planning militarily. So if they needed trucks to move the tanks, or they needed fresh water here, or they needed fuel here, they had to go through this company that I worked for. So it was a cool job.
So you're literally just organizing people's survival, right? Hey, working with
logistics for all these soldiers. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
How long did you do that for before you then started to take your next move?
Well, I did. I got out of the Army in 99. I went into government contracting. I think it was 25, and spent 6 years, more or less. I was in the Balkans, in Hungary and Bosnia, working as a contractor. I took a year off, got my MBA in Prague, which was the best year of my life. I spent a year as a student in Prague. I was 30 years old. Learned a lot, loaded up on like how to run a business. Went back to this company and helped them, went to the corporate office, and then went down to Dubai in the Middle East. They're on this huge, huge, huge program. We set up logistics all around the Middle East, Jordan, Turkey, Kuwait, Iraq, Afghanistan, Djibouti. So I helped set up the supply chain for this this pretty massive contract they had. I did that for about 6 years. Always kind of said, you know, I was with my buddy that I was in the Army with, and I always say, hey, we could do this ourselves. And my buddy got promoted to the CEO of a smaller company, and he brought me on board. So he and I left the big company, and we were the C-suite for a medium-sized supply chain company that also supported military embassies, you know, U.S., NATO, UN-type programs, all overseas. So we ran supply chains basically through this company. And that's how I wound up in Switzerland back in 2017.
What made you stay there?
Why would you leave?
I've never been. I know it obviously sounds amazing, but what was it about Switzerland that gripped you?
Well, I was moving into family phase. Has the Germanic, you know, I spent a lot of time in my life in Germany. I speak pretty good German. Good quality of life, good place to raise kids. My wife and I were moving into kid mode, and we were living in Dubai. And at that time, Dubai was more of a construction zone.
Yeah, I bet.
I thought it'd be nice to move where the grass was green. So I moved here with my buddy, and we ran this company for almost a decade, doing supply chains for the U.S. government. And we ran food supply chains. We'd buy the food in the U.S., bring it to Germany, and ship it out all over Europe. We ran supply chains in Africa, the Middle East. Really kind of crazy stuff. We bought an oil and gas company, had 3 offices in Kazakhstan. We were in Israel. We were in Iraq. Had a big operation in Dubai, Germany. So it was a really, kind of a crazy business, very fast-paced, very multicultural. And the cool thing is we decided early on no HR department. You know, we had about 500 people in the company spread out all over the world. And there's a guy on our board, a guy named Chuck, who has a great company called BCK Consulting. And Chuck taught us to use tools around managing people without HR. So we had a really cool people ecosystem that had personality assessments and psychometrics and a rolling 360 and 9 blocks. And we use this kind of people ecosystem to manage this company that's kind of spread out all over the world. And, you know, it was a supply chain company, but at the end of the day, it was a people business. You know?
Yeah. Wow. Sounds like a lot. Sounds like a big, big organization. Well, so what was your vision at that point? Were you looking at like scaling something and selling it and getting an exit out of it? Or what was your strategy at that point?
That's what we did. We wound up growing the business. Patrick and I got a little bit of sweat equity in it, and we sold the company about 9 years ago. You know, that whole time we were working inside this government contracting space.
Yep.
You know, working directly for the U.S. government. And we also built a outsourcing business where these big companies would win a contract in Africa, but they wouldn't have a supply chain. They would outsource part of their supply chain to us. So we ran supply chains for most of the big brand name companies that were operating overseas. And so we built a huge network. You can imagine, I always say, like my year group now is pinning on 1-star in the Army. Back in the Balkans, that was kind of like the original mafia for the industry. because when the industry exploded, everybody came out of the Balkans and started working all over the world. Wow. And then 10 years of running TWI, the supply chain company, we touched a lot of these big prime contractors, big companies, got them to outsource supply chain, which takes a pretty good amount of trust. And yeah, we built a pretty substantial network across this industry over the course of 10 years of running that company.
So what did it mean when that business sold? What did that mean for you financially? Were you in a position to take some time and work out what you wanted to do in the next
day? had a couple of years of a non-compete. We just were kind of on the sidelines, and I I'd always had this in my mind, particularly the way we ran our company using these cool people tools. And I thought, like, if there's any industry in the world that needs good hiring, good assessment, good development, it's this industry, because these people are in this industry are going out and working in crazy, high-paced, dangerous locations. They're in Iraq, they're in Afghanistan, they're in Africa, they're in Israel, and they're under a lot of pressure. And so we always, when we're inside all these companies, always thinking, like, you know, they don't have good people systems and they're not very good at hiring. No one seems to have figured out how to hire properly and effectively inside this industry. So then we had this idea to set up Precision Talent Solutions. And we actually were going to be a software company. We started out, we were going to build a SaaS platform and kind of like a mini LinkedIn for this industry.
Yeah.
And charge candidates to be on the platform, charge companies to get access to the platform, and build a software. We got involved with developers. We built our MVP, and we took a lot of the tools that we'd used in running our company and put them into the software. So a lot of the assessment tools, the 9-block predictor, the personality assessment, the cognitive assessment, the video interviews, the reference checks, we took all that and put it into this kind of tech stack. And started showing it to customers. They're like, this is great. This is awesome. But could you find me a chief operating officer? I'm like, well, we're building a software. We're not doing recruiting. And they're like, well, you have a great network. Everybody knows you. You got a good reputation. Why don't you just do some headhunting? So we actually kind of pivoted using the software and the technology approach and pointed it towards building an executive search firm.
And so there was just you and another guy at this point.
Yeah, it was the two of us. I was mainly running the recruiting business. He was working some M&A stuff. And, you know, I absolutely loved it. So I was doing recruiting myself, which I kind of got a kick out of. And I always tell my team, I'm not asking you to do anything that I haven't done. I have sourced. I have screened. I didn't have a LinkedIn recruiter seat when I started.
Yeah. You
know, we started out with the bare bones.
I never had that in my whole recruitment career. Never had a recruiter license.
Yeah,
it didn't exist until I was finishing up. So you didn't need it back then. I mean, you don't need it now. It gives you access to a bigger playing field. But
it's a tool in the toolbox. So I've recruited myself. I still jump in projects every now and then. So yeah, started building up the business. You know, one person at a time.
The tech platform was that classic marketplace that everyone, so many businesses are trying to create, and there's like Juno, and there are a fair few out there that have done really well. Majority that I know of don't do that well because they struggle with the flow on both sides. So, you know, if you keep signing customers to a monthly recurring revenue and you don't have the talent coming in,
chicken or the egg, right?
Yeah, it's this consistent balance on it, and I think that's the hardest thing. When people are paying, you know, they're going to want that consistent flow. But you said you've never done this before. You've been a recruiter internally for your own businesses. You've hired loads of people, I imagine, but you've never actually been an external recruiter. So how did you go about those first few roles when you've never actually worked in a recruitment firm before?
Well, I think the difference is, and still the difference today, is I know the mission. I know the market. I know how it thinks. I know how people behave. And so to find a program manager for the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, which is a big sprawl. It's a small city. This is basically the mayor that runs it. So how do you find that engineer with his top secret security clearance that has good bedside manner with customers, can talk to the Department of State. Well, I mean, if you've been there, you kind of understand the context. It makes it a lot easier. And I think that's what's different between us. And I mean, our main competitors aren't other executive search firms. It's the in-house recruiting departments, right?
Really?
And yeah, my kind of idea on this has been to hire people that know the mission, that have been out in the field for the most part. If you stacked up all of our government contracting experience, we have 35 people, and I think we have 450 years of cumulative experience on the team. So a lot of
Think the military and then the industry you work later, do you think it serves well into the, like it leans well into the recruitment process?
Well, it's, you got to find relationships that aren't transactional. We've really been focused on that as we kind of built our customer base up and focusing on our main core customers where we can really understand their business, their contracts, their strategy, and try and stay away from, you know, a lot of government contracting. You got to put out three bids for everything. You got to compete everything. It's very transactional. We're trying to move more into more strategic relationships with customers where we add more value, frankly.
But do you think the skills you learn in the military and then as a contractor, do you think they translate into being a good recruiter? Because like you say, most of your talent is coming from that space. So
yeah, you know, every recruitment project is, it's also kind of backwards planning, right? You look at the end state, you got to come up with your plan, your backwards plan off of that. You know, the folks on my team have worked some hard days, long hours, and, you know, they're not worried about weekends. I mean, they want to get the mission done, very mission focused. And I think there's a little bit of, I wouldn't call it patriotism, but there's pride in the mission. I mean, what we're doing is not running retail shops. You know, we're supporting, men and women and soldiers and diplomats and people out in difficult locations. So I also think there's a bit of, there's that extra effort to support the mission from our team because we've been part of the mission before.
Yeah. One thing, the reason I ask is the company I work for in London, we had a consistent flow of ex-military recruiters, some from the Royal Marines, some from the British Army, some from the SAS, SBS.
Yep.
Didn't always work out though. Like there was a mix, I'd say 50-50. We had one good one and then we went all in and hired about eight. And I found that there was some real challenges with, what's the word? Like, I guess following process was something that was, they were good at, but it got to the point where they lacked the ability to move around it or to be flexible enough. And it was quite rigid. And it was like, just follow, they just want to follow A, B, C, D, E. And sometimes it doesn't work that way. Sometimes it gets, I found there was a bit of a rigidity to their style. And then I don't know, like some of the kind of non-military staff telling them what to do, it was almost like you've never worked, like it's almost like they became a bit of a clique. And it's like, you've not worked, you're not from our world.
Yeah.
So we're not going to listen to you. And it became, it wasn't like a divide, but it was, yeah, there was definitely a little bit of like, there was a little bit of a click, a little bit of animosity, I think, between military and non-military. And then it kind of just fizzled out and a few of them left. But I'm not saying, I mean, I think it's a great talent pool because there's a lot of people who need work. They're coming out and, you know, into civilian life, they need work, right? There's a consistent flow of people.
I don't know that it's much different than hiring anybody else. It's easier for me to understand the former military folks because I'm also former military and I deal with a lot of them. You have to, we use the same tools we use for screening our candidates. We use for our own team, the same kind of personality assessments and psychometrics. So also looking for those, you know, those watch outs whenever we're recruiting for our own team. But I think there's a lot to be said for knowing the mission. I would say great recruiting requires empathy. You know, you got to understand what the customer is going through and also what the candidate's going through.
Yeah.
And a lot of these former military folks, they do. They have the empathy for the mission. They understand what's going on.
How would you describe the mission?
Well, the mission is, it changes every day in our industry, right? If you just watch the news, very much tied to foreign policy. NATO foreign policy, U.S. foreign policy. It's very, to some extent, contract driven. If you just look at how the footprints build up and they go down, and that's why there's a need for recruiting, because it's not a steady state. This isn't banking or this isn't FMCG. This is something happens here. There's a need for talent. It happens for a couple of years and then it goes away and then it goes somewhere else.
Wow.
That's very much the nature of the mission. And it tends to be, very focused on, the end customer is that second lieutenant that's out on the checkpoint, right? Making sure he gets his hot chicken. That's, you gotta keep that in the back of your mind, right? Every day when you're coming to work, like, okay, there's a reason why we're doing all this. And it's really is an important mission that we're supporting.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Cause yeah, at the end of the day, your customers are then supplying those people.
That's right.
Well, yeah. So talk me through the journey of growing a recruiting firm then. Again, you've got experience of hiring, you're a smart guy, you've ran businesses, you've exited businesses. You then get this need to find talent from the clients, even though you'd plan the marketplace, and it's just you running it. Talk me through like the first 12 to 24 months of that journey. What was it really like? Like, where were you? Were you remote? How did you go about it?
A lot of things you don't know, right?
Yeah.
In terms of the business side, how do you structure fees and commissions, and how do you protect yourself through proper agreements? And then the biggest challenge of all is most businesses is the selling. Like, the good news is I had at that point almost 20 years in the industry, great network. A lot of my friends had fleeted up into senior level positions. There's an element of trust. It's still an element of trust, everything you do, right? And I think there's an element of trust that you're going to do what you say you're going to do. That's one level of trust. And another level of trust is, if I tell you something, you're going to keep it to yourself. But the real level of trust is, when these customers are hiring you or engaging you, they're trusting you with one of their biggest problems, which is finding people. And I think that the early nascent days of PTS was built a lot on trust. It was built a lot on our network, and it was built a lot on our ability to navigate the industry to find the right kind of talent. And as I started adding to the team, I didn't hire low-level, low-cost administrators that were just entering the workforce. I just started hiring people that had been out in the field, people that had the right level of motivation, they would have the right context for what we're doing.
How did you come across these guys? Were they like candidates you were dealing with for roles and you were like, you could work for us?
Yeah, some cases, yeah, they were candidates we wound up hiring. That's happened several times. We built a good team here in Europe from the Balkans. So kind of going back to my roots, a lot of our team are warriors and veterans of long, long deployments out in Afghanistan and Iraq and Kuwait and Africa that have worked inside these base camps, living and working there. And now they've moved back home. And, there's no jobs to be had necessarily. So they've I've hired a lot of these folks that understand the mission. They have the right kind of context. They know the customer base. They've been candidates themselves. They speak the acronyms, the very acronym-heavy industry that we're in. And then a lot of my account executives have been, director, even vice president level management, working in a lot of these companies. So they bring with them a lot of their networks, best practices. And we've been stitching this thing together, brick by brick, like from one hire to the next, and building up the team.
How has it evolved? How has the model changed then? Because I imagine in the early days, it was just you recruiting 360, pulling work, filling work, delighting customers, finding the next job. How have you had to evolve as you've grown?
We haven't lost the vision, the technology vision, and we're using a really cool technology stack for our process, and our customers love it. I mean, they're like, I don't know why we don't do this. I don't know why everybody doesn't do this. Everything we do is delivered online. There's a lot of information on each candidate right at the fingertips of the decision makers, from video interview, the psychometrics, the chance of leadership success, a 9-block predictor, a cognitive assessment, so you see what they're, you know, just what's between their ears. There's a lot of focus on technology, on delivery, and investing technology back, you know, into the business, into operations, having best of class ATS. You know, I think we have 27 LinkedIn recruiter seats. We have subscriptions to all the niche job boards and career sites that impact our industry. So a lot of focus on technology. And I used to think that recruiting was kind of an art, right? And everyone did it their own way. And a lot of, you know, we were talking about EOS before, getting to process. There's best practices. There are things you do during a recruiting process that are going to increase the chances of you winning.
Yeah. Everybody winning. I think the more you process map your business, the better your business will be.
Absolutely. Like,
and if people have got a natural flair on top, great. But you can't have a lot of mavericks running around doing it their own way.
That's right.
Because look at the best football teams. Guardiola doesn't matter how good you are. You don't play your own way in that team. Like, you don't.
That's right.
And I think I love looking at Jurgen Klopp and Guardiola and now Xabi Alonso and all these managers that get a team set up a certain way, because it's so translatable to our industry. Because I always say this, like, how you want your team to play is up to you. It's up to you. Like, giving people all the tools and saying, use which ones you want. I mean, I don't believe that's the route. I think you need to decide on a minimum target operating model. People can add to bits here, there, and everywhere, but there needs to be a consistent flow in everything you do that people follow and repeat. And I imagine from a military background, that'll come more naturally to you than some other leaders that are just pure sales guys.
Yeah, I'm not saying there's no personality in recruiting. And I think there's a lot of personality in recruiting, but you got to have some basic process, some best practices, repeatable processes, measurable processes. As Savage says, activities, right? The right kind of activities, the right frequency, the right quality, the right kind of activities to the right people. And then our model shifted. You know, when you first start a recruiting business, as a lot of the folks that have done it, you take the work you can get. You do a lot of contingent work, and you just work your butt off. And, you know, as we've evolved the organization and we've moved up to more senior, so we're doing quite a few retained CEO, C-suite searches, working with private equity companies, private equity held companies. So we've moved now up into this kind of retained executive search space, where that's a lot of my peers, a lot of my network, a lot of people I know personally. You know, majority of what we do is in that director, vice president, senior vice president level. And nothing we do is contingent. Everything has some sort of retainer to it. We call it a container, where there's some progress payments that happen. So that's actually reduced the risk in the business model. Because, I mean, to me, the devil in any recruiting business is customers canceling projects. So the more commitment you can get from them up front early on, so that we can invest in the project. I mean, it's not about them. It's about us too. And if you give me a contingent project, I mean, okay, I'm not signed up to fill it necessarily. And you're probably giving it to five other people, and that's not interesting to me. I want to be exclusive. I want to be able to build a team around your project. I want to be able to put everything into filling it as possible. So our model's really shifted now into more of a contained and retained model, which is a big deal.
A message from our sponsor, Vincere. Another of their products is known as Time Temp. This is your complete integrated timesheet workforce management solution. It's pre-built, it's pre-integrated, and it's designed so no matter how much your business grows, you'll be able to keep track of every single worker in one place in your CRM. All the changes inside Vincere will sync with Time Temp and they'll be fed back into your account, automating the entire process with two-way sync from your front to back office. Vincere's Time Temp enables you to create shift schedules, search available workers, shortlist, and book assignments in seconds. They'll also allow you to track time, track leave, track expenses within their built-in payroll engine. It's called Door Clock. And then they've also got a mobile app for the on-the-go worker. If, again, you're looking to get more from your CRM, Vincere's Time Temp solution is another tool that enables you to perform more of your business-critical processes in your CRM. Find out if you could use Time Temp via the link in the show notes. Right, let's get back to it.
You said earlier on about the fact that this your competition isn't other exec search firms, it's the in-house teams. So are there other businesses completely copying, like doing exactly what you do, ex-military guys running similar firms, or are you like a one-off type of business in this space?
You have, there's quite a few of the big, we call them the Shreks, the Heidrick and Struggles and the Rains and there's one Northwind, some of these companies that are fully retained exec search firms. And there's a lot of agencies out there that are slinging resumes and not adding a lot of value. We try to carve out this space in the middle because I think there's a lot of room there, particularly in our industry, where a fully retained high fee search is it's a big ask of the client, puts a lot of risk on the client. And I think there's a lot of the agencies that are just slinging resumes, but that space in the middle of quality at a decent price, I think there's a lot of space for companies like PTS. But the good news is I don't see a lot of competition in the space. Plus, on top of that, our expertise is also very international. And you can't just say, I want to be international. I mean, I'd say 3/4 of my team lives outside the U.S. So we're in 12 different countries. So from an international perspective, I think we're very unique.
How many recruiters have you got? Well, salespeople and recruiters.
Oh, we only got about 35 people on the team. So sourcers, recruiters, account leads, and some GM.
And what is that split? So if I was coming to your business for the first time, how would it work? How many different people would I deal with to get my mandate filled?
You'd have an account exec that will take care of you through the whole process. And each account exec has a small team that supports them based upon how big the project is.
Would it be a different guy perhaps to sell the project to begin with?
Well, hopefully not. Hopefully the account exec is selling it too. But sometimes we get a lot of repeat business. So we've lined our account execs along our customers so they really get to know everything about that company, everything about their business, about their strategy, about their contracts, about their brand. I got customers that they'll say, like, you know more about my company than my team does. Because we really study, we study our customers because it just helps when you go out in the market, you can credibly talk about that customer. So hopefully you're not going through a lot of people.
Do you have a new business team though? That's what I'm thinking. Like, do you have people that specifically go out and win new business?
I do. I have a kind of a special marketing sales team led by a lady. She's Slovak American, has a security clearance, been in the industry forever, knows everybody, has a consulting background. And so it's not a typical sales type profile. It's someone that knows the inside of the industry. Because I think that's where the value is, right? It's these companies have strategic problems and it almost always comes back to the people challenge, right? And it's understanding the right mix of people, the right experience, the right agency familiarity. And so I always say we're not selling, we're helping, right? And the more we can get out and understand our customers and be able to add value even beyond recruiting, like our strategic customers, they get access to our network, they get introductions, they get M&A leads, they get we can help them with partnerships and joint ventures. So we're doing a lot more than just providing resumes. We're trying to provide a lot more value to our customers through our network. I always say, using an Army analogy, most of our customers are in their foxhole. You know, they're just working every day, digging their foxhole, trying to make sure it's all good. And they see the world from their foxhole, but they don't know what's over the hill line, right? And they don't know what they look like from the outside. And I tell them, I say, look, we're mezzanine players. We're all over. We know what's going on. And so when we're working with you, you get access to our network, our market intelligence. And so it's a lot more value beyond just doing recruiting.
That feeds into what I talk about and what we're doing with you is if you're going to say that, you need to show that, right? So I believe great recruiters have a really good ear for what's going on in the market. You know, you do sit on a fringe of a space where you're speaking to so many different organizations in a week that some might, you know, you might hear more in a week than some people hear in their career. So it's your responsibility to share that, not necessarily the exact intimate details you say on the phone, but you should be consistently sharing a narrative that supports people at scale, that educates, that inspires. That. So how have you found, obviously since coming and working with me and the journey, how do you find that? Like you mentioned it before, it's a bit of an epiphany. Like it's, how has that transcribed into your business where you're like, right, we're no longer just saying it on the phone now. We've got to do it. We've got to show it.
Yeah. Well, look, we got a lot of experience on our team, a lot of insights, a lot of advice. And I think the epiphany that through Hoaxo is like, we got to amplify that. It's very valuable. I say that recruiting is a commodity. A company can find a recruiting agency anywhere. I mean, around Washington, D.C., you can't turn around without hitting a headhunter or a recruiter. Yeah. So they're not buying recruiting. They're buying trust. They're buying insights, and they're buying access to our network.
Yeah.
Right? They're not buying recruiting. And a lot of CEOs are like, hey, can we just have 30 minutes together so I can catch up and find out what's going on? And through what we're doing with Hoaxo, it's a way to chop up this insight and the trust and the access and to give it to our community. And we're building our own community, kind of like you are, because people are looking to us as thought leaders and market leaders. And I think that's important. And we're taking it a step further. And I don't know why no one's done this. We're building a service. We're rolling it out actually this month, formally. We've been doing it for years for free, helping people do career transition. We're calling it Career Concierge. It's specific to this industry, right? Which is a somewhat mercenary, nomadic industry driven by contracts. And people change jobs a lot in this industry because work comes and it goes and they have to go change companies. I started out helping transitioning military officers navigate that into the civilian world. We built a whole process around differentiators, personality assessment, building filters for what they should be looking for. Now we're turning it out. We started working with executives doing the same. So we are going to be offering services to the candidates now who need help. People do career transition, but two or three times in a career, hopefully. And it's terrifying. And there's best ways to do it. And there's best tools. And the good news is, not only are we offering that as a service, it's bolted onto this big recruiting networking machine.
Is that pulling people from the current, from the military or from the contractor space?
Both. Yeah. So military will be doing as a give back, as a CSR, and for executives, it's a nominal fee, but then they become part of our community. We could help them with everything from fixing up their resume, giving them some Hoaxo-like advice on their social media presence, which is, I think, pretty important these days, on their profile, to helping them understand themselves better and what their search strategy should be. So Career Concierge is needed in our industry. I'm really glad to be able to offer it to people. How many times as a recruitment executive does someone say, can you look at my resume? Yeah, but if I do that every time someone asks it, I'm going to go out of business. But I want to give back. I want to be able to help people. And so I think Career Concierge is going to be revolutionary for our industry.
Well, this
community.
One of my clients, Calvin Lee Pickett, I had on the podcast recently, in Dubai. He's monetized his candidate audience because he took my training and he's like, the social selling parts are so powerful. But actually, if I just add in a few extra modules around CV creation through networking, just how to apply for certain jobs in a certain way, he's produced this like training program, and now all these applications of people wanting to work in Dubai that he could never help, he's now helping, and he's created a second revenue stream. So he's got his recruitment business and his coaching business,
and I think if it's industry specific, even better.
His is more it's all location specific, so it's people trying to get into the UAE.
Same idea. Yeah. To me, I just want to, if someone asks you for help and you don't do anything, it's a negative. It's a small negative. And we can't stop every time someone asks for help. I want to have a solution for them. And so I think it's a big deal. We're doing a lot around diversity and veteran recruiting as well, because that's important. Unfortunately, our industry is still kind of a middle-aged white man's industry. And there's a lot of opportunities, a lot of great talent out there. I think if you want to hit diversity goals, though, or every vice president you hire, you should go everywhere you can, do everything you can to find the right diversity candidates and veterans. And I think that implies headhunting, not passive recruiting. So we've kind of built our processes and systems and our network around being able to support diversity recruiting and also veteran recruiting, which is that's a hot button in the U.S. I imagine it is. It's a very big deal in government contracting right now to diversify the workforce. I think that that's a big need for the industry.
I love it. So what how would you describe your job, Jake? Like, what do you do?
Well, I'm the chief salesman, which I can't help it. I love it. It just comes naturally. Taking care of my team, always recruiting for our team for the next best talent to add to our team. If you're using EOS speak, I'm the visionary.
I'm putting this. That's what forward. I am as well.
I really feel like we're onto something special here. It's a rare win-win-win opportunity in business where you get to change someone's life. You get to help a company do something that's so important, which is hire the right people, and we get paid for it. And I love it. I'm passionate about it. I do it for free, though I'm not going to, but I love it that much. I get a kick out of it. It's very rewarding. And building a team that's, you know, lined up with these kind of core values, I think, is important. I tell our team, we have 5 core values, and the last one is passion. I said, if you don't love this, if you aren't excited about it, then go somewhere else. This is a mission we're on. We have fun doing it. And I get up every day. I can't wait for Monday just to get to work and get to moving things forward. So I'm real excited about what we're doing at PTS.
So when you say chief salesman, does that mean you're still out there trying to open new customers? Are you flying in and helping out with existing projects and navigating relationships? Like, how would you describe that sales role at the level you're at now?
Yeah, we're less about bringing in a lot of new customers and more about taking care of our existing customers. And I feel like where I add the most value is taking those relationships and helping those CEOs, the CXOs, the business unit leads, helping them make hard decisions, whether it's around talent or just around the industry. And I think my team's great, but I'm also been around the block a time or two and can read between the lines on a lot of situations. So I think that's where I add a lot of value. I'm not out knocking on doors so much trying to get in new customers. We get a lot of repeat business, a lot of satisfied customers that just say, can you help me with this? Can you help me with this? As a visionary, I mean, I think that a lot of customers want to hear what you think about this challenge or this opportunity. So that's where I like to spend my time.
Do you think you're uniquely placed as well? Like, if I was just to, you know, imagine a recruiting firm trying to interrupt your client base, coming without any industry experience, just a lot of young, energetic sales guys from the UK or whatever, like, you know. And look, though these businesses are everywhere and they're doing well.
Yeah. But that's not going to work.
The proposition of, like, you know, a seasoned, industry-focused group of, like, mission-driven, values-driven individuals, like, it's just non-comparable to some of this. Why, like, when people have such a negative perception of the recruitment industry, it's why I love it so much when I meet people like you, because I love the way you build it. You're not building the classic cheap sales engine that doesn't give a shit about its people. Like, you care about the industry, like, you're contributing to the industry, you're building. And that's why I love this space, because I've got clients like you in every single sector, pretty much. And they're the only ones I end up working with anyway, because they're the only ones who give a shit enough about the market to invest in their own brand so that they learn. And do you know what I mean? Like, the ones who never want to learn this stuff, I don't want to work with them anyway. So it gives you a really strong USP.
It's a long game. You know, you got to be in the long game. You know, every year I have a new theme. A couple years ago, it was every meeting we talked about treating your candidates like customers. Treat your candidates as well as you do your, treat them better, because your candidates will become your customers if you treat them with respect, you keep them informed, even if the answer isn't great for them. Treating your candidates like customers. And and on the customer side, like, realize they could buy recruiting anywhere. I mean, just know that. And don't sell recruiting. Don't use your network, give them insights. I think
I always think if you're selling recruitment processes, you're selling just time.
Yeah.
You're selling, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. That's not why anyone charges the money they charge and demands exclusivity. And like, I can only go back to my time in the industry, and I used to fill jobs in my head before I even left the room. And yeah. Clients were like, you've really got three people? I'm like, yeah. I know exactly who I'm going to call. I used to show, I'd be like, look, I'm hoping this is going to stay between us, but here's three guys on my phone now that I think would be good. And they'll be like, oh, wow, yeah, you're on the money. And I was able to, you know, I was able to put two people in a room before they'd even been in the room,
yep.
before I even got back to the office and go, I know he's right on paper, but I know he's going to get along with them as well. And I know they're on the right. So I think there's a skill there that's not, but we were very process driven to get to that point. Yep. We had to meet a certain amount of people. We had to ask the right questions. We had to document, like there was a plan around it. I wasn't just some crazy memory Rain Man. There was a plan to it.
You got to scale it. That's the challenge. That's why you need process. You need good system.
What have you got wrong? What? Give us a big boo-boo, a big mistake you've made. Because I think not many people come on the show, and I mean, they're honest, but it tends to be a look how good we're doing at times, and it can be quite frustrating. When you've come in at the age you're at, really candid guy, you know, there's no benefit to you bullshitting anyone. You didn't work in recruiting before. Like, well, give us a mistake that you look back and you go, I'd do that differently.
I think when we started out, we didn't know which area of the market we wanted to support, and we have a really good network overseas and good contacts in Kenya and the Balkans, Eastern Europe, and we got initially kind of trapped into doing kind of lower end commoditized work, and that's stuff the big companies can do themselves. They have the brand, they have the logo, I'm not saying they don't care about quality, but at the end of the day, they just need a guy with a driver's license and so many years of experience and decent English skills. I think we got a bit trapped in that. It took us a while brand-wise to get over that because we're not doing that now. And our focus is where we add the most value, and that's around senior roles where the job description doesn't even matter, right?
Yeah.
It's like very, very rarely do we use the job description. We take it, we look at it, but where that being able to understand what the customer really needs, where that really matters. So I think branding wise, I wish we hadn't done and invested as much as we did in that end of the market and just went straight up here where we had the most value.
What is it? How much of your business is permanent versus contract?
Well, everything we do is permanent.
Everything.
Permanent, yeah.
How does that affect your mindset when you're coming in blank slate every month? Because a lot of businesses try and run it 50-50 or more leaning on the contract so that they have that recurring revenue model where the cost base are covered. How do you feel?
That's why we got to take care of our customers, right? Because you want repeat business. You don't want to have to go find new customers. You want to have a pipeline. You may not know what it is you're working on in 3 months, but you know they're going to need you.
Yeah.
And really, the smart companies, they look forward to talking to us. They see us as a real partner. They see us as an extension of their brand and not as some third-party recruiting agency. And the more we do that, the deeper we get like that, then the need to go into staffing, because staffing, you know, in general, staffing goes up to a certain level, like the manager or supervisor level. And we want to stay up more on the executive search side, on the permanent side. So just keep taking care of your customers, being strategic, helping them out beyond just recruiting, that helps take care of the problem, drives more repeat business.
So you don't come in with that feeling every month like, right, we're back to zero now.
No, I always have a good feeling of, I kind of know where the customers are in their cycles, and they go through cycles too, right? And you know when they're going to win big programs because you know the market. You know when there's M&A going on. You know when they're going to be in transition, and that's when they're going to need the most help, right? And so as long as you kind of know in the back of your head, well, the second half of the year, I know this company will be going through a transition, then you know they're going to need help. And that's where we are.
Yeah. And what's a typical turnaround time on a vacancy in your world?
You know, it can go from... walk out the door and you already know the candidates, as you said, which happens quite a bit. And actually, I try to avoid doing that and really do a proper process and then throw our candidates in.
You get a bit too trigger happy.
Yeah, you just get too focused. And you have some customers, you know, particularly the retained customers, like to take their time. They like to be thoughtful. They like to iterate. Our best customer, I probably spend 1 or 2 hours a week with the CEO talking talent, thinking about it. You know, it's okay because I know we're going to get it right. So it's the whole range. I think a normal project we're doing, you know, we're giving in. We come to a kickoff meeting. We're trying to bring a list with us of representative candidates, so we have something to talk about on the kickoff instead of the job description, right? Then we turn around within 5-7 days, we're coming back with another list. We call it calibration. We're showing, hey, here's, based on what you said, what we said during the kickoff, what you like, what you don't like, here's another list. What do you like? What do you don't like? We try and get them a lot of different looks on that. And then, you know, because we're in this market so deeply, and because of all the horsepower and the tools and the sourcing machine, we're typically putting in panels within 3 weeks of kickoff, 2 weeks of kickoff, with full profiles, with video interviews, personality assessments, chance of leadership success predictor, a 9-block predictor, the whole suite delivered online. So it's a lot of information we're putting in front of our customers. We're not just sending them a resume. And everything comes with an executive summary written by one of our account execs with everything they want to know, how many dogs they got, how much money they make, you know, what makes them tick. So it's a lot of information we put together, I think, in a fairly quick time. And the rest depends on the customer, right? Some move out right away. Some want to think about it. So we just have to adapt to their needs.
So what does this year look like? So you talked about traction in the book that I mentioned in my first ever RAG episode in 2019. Me and this guy, Sam Green, Few and Far, we were on the first episode and he was like, he mentioned it. I was like, I'm reading that book now. And we went off on a tangent. That was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So tell me about, well, what is that a big part of your 2024 plan?
Yeah, I came into the year calm because we had a good plan. We use that EOS process for strategic planning. We're all talking the same language. We know what we got to do this year. It's not about this year. It's next 5 years, next 10 years, what we really want to do. I think this year we're going to continue to move into these senior retained strategic searches, and we built more capacity around that area within the company. We're really good around business development talent, which is critical to all these companies. And the good ones aren't looking for a job. They're competing, they're winning, and they're definitely not applying to career boards. You got to go find them. So we're going to continue to drive that. This career concierge, rolling that out, building, expanding our community on the candidate side and helping people navigate career transition, I think is a big part of this year. More focus on private equity. We work with a lot of private equity owned companies. Now we want to work directly with the private equity firms because they're doing deals. You know, they're doing 15 deals a year. Every time they buy a company, they need a new C-suite. They need a new CGO. They need a new executive team. And I think that we add a lot of value on the private equity side because we got such a finger on the pulse. We know a lot of companies that might be good targets. We know what right looks like from the inside. So I think from the private equity perspective, we could be really great partners, even beyond just helping them find the right C-suite. Yeah. I think there's a lot of value we can add on the equity side. So those are three main things that we're focused on.
And you said it's like a 5-10 year plan. Like, how far ahead do you plan, and what goes into, well, how detailed are those plans in future years?
Hey, we built the financial model out 10 years. It's rough. I mean, you got to do it for your VTO, right? Mm-hmm. Vision Traction Organizer. We put a number out there, and not just a number. My CFO built up based upon certain assumptions and, you know, new mandates, new customers, and certain CAGR. So we have a financial model that goes out 10 years. You know, my view is I'm 50. I'm ready to open up a live music venue here in Switzerland. I'm building a management team that can run the company. And I want to be the ambassador. I want to be the visionary. I want to be involved in building the PTS team, but I also want to share the opportunity with the rest of the PTS family. I want to build a great workplace for people where they are passionate, like I talked about with the core value, where they're proud of what they do and they can share in the upside. So that's my plan.
Wow. And you don't, let's say, you don't necessarily need to be running everything if you get the right people around you. But you'll stay it, but you want to be in it. Like you're not looking for that exit sunset moment. No. Sounds like you love it.
I love it. Why would I do that? Why would I? Yeah. Why would I step out of this? I think it's and trying to like, you know, my team has great brands and then in and of themselves. I mean, they have great careers. They have their own levels of trust, and we're continuing to, you know, build our collective brand. When it starts out just you, it's your brand, right? And the challenge over the years is to distribute that brand. And you do that just from doing good work. There are new customers that come in I never talked to. I'm like, oh, who's this customer? Oh, you know, the lore about it.
How do you know when you're doing something for too long, like when you should be giving it away, when you should be delegating?
Do the delegate elevate quadrants, right? From how to be a great boss. I can't remember what page number that is. But yeah, I have my own things. I want to be doing things I'm great at that I love doing. And I still do things that I'm okay at doing, but I can't stand doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Those are the things we got to figure out. Okay, who can do those? There are some people that love doing that.
Yeah.
It's not me. So, yeah, I think having that kind of mental picture of the things you're great at, and the things you love doing, that's where you should spend your time and energy. Everything else, there's someone else that'll do it. There's someone else that probably loves doing it or is better at it than you. And that's the challenge, right?
It's having the time to actually break down what you're doing. A lot of people don't do that. They just carry on working. They just keep throwing in. They don't actually take that headspace to breathe and go, I've got a pretty good handle on what I'm doing this year.
Yep.
Got a good team around me. It's quite similar. And I'm definitely, there's certain things I'm still doing, like you say, I don't really want to do. But most of it, I'm leaning into the things I like now and I enjoy and I'm good at. And, you know, but there are things where I think I could probably get others to help and take off some of the weight. You know, I'll own something so far that it's like, it's stressing me out. I'm like, well, there's better people than me to take the granular elements away.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't make me read a contract. I can't concentrate that long.
You know? No.
There's people that love doing that. And it ain't me. You know?
Well, I'm great at presenting slides, but I hate making them.
Yeah.
I fucking hate making them. Any document that you get me to write out, like, oh my God. But I'll present it all day. Throw it in front of a screen. I'll stand up and I'll enjoy it. I enjoy standing there and communicating a message. Like, you know, my business partner hates it. He's like, stood up there, the recruitment expo in London last month, and I was on the stage, and you know, I loved it.
Yeah,
loved it. But putting the slides together, nah, I can get the detail out of my head, and then someone else needs to do the design and the writing, and yeah, nah, not for me.
Yeah, look, we got to keep, I just promoted one of my guys to be chief innovation officer. Andy's taken that seat. I'm really focused on innovating, always thinking how's recruiting going to be done 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Let's get there as soon as possible. Let's look at the AI tools. Let's look at the different tech stacks. My COO has grown up in the business. She's been with me almost since the start. She helped build Bullhorn. Knows the nooks and the crannies of everything and how it all is all put together. I think the key is keeping the account execs working both sides, not just operations, but, you know, always looking for new opportunities and spreading out the sales opportunities, right? Where it's not centralized, where it's decentralized. I think that's going to help us scale. As a company, I tell them, I say, look, guys, the social selling stuff we're doing, the Hoaxo, the 2010-5, look, I know it seems like an extra task, but if we all do this, our addressable market of director and above in our industry is probably 1 million people. We're at over 100,000 collective connections right now. I said, we do this 2 years, we're going to be connected with 60, 70% of the industry, first degree.
And you'll be seen by all of them.
That's right. And everybody's going to know who we are. They can't buy from you. They don't know who you are. So we got to get over that. And from a recruiting perspective, if you're connected with 500,000 people in your industry, then your access.
You're there.
Yeah.
So, that's why, I mean, I have this big debate a lot, and I stood on the stage in London and I basically said, look, AI is incredible, what's, you know, an automation, but for certain, for businesses like you, which is typically my client base, it's actually not necessarily what you need, because the last thing you want, correct me if I'm wrong, is to be ripping up all these contacts and spamming inboxes with really poor quality email. Like, you've already got a brand. You guys are fucking experienced. You've got a premium reputation. You know, you've already got 100,000 connections. Like, what you want to do is expand that, grow that, nurture that, become, be seen as a leader to that, rather than, you know, if you're doing B2C, like one of my friends runs a firm where he helps men overcome their relationship with alcohol, and he's working with me. Incredible. But he has to use automation, right? Because no man on LinkedIn has fucking, I drink this many units of alcohol on their head, on their profile. So he literally has to hit every single person in certain job titles with a message to get, you know, one reply out of 1,000 messages.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's his business model.
Yeah.
Whereas when there's a finite amount of people in a space, do you really want to burn all of them with a message that I don't think you do? Like, I think you can I use a lot of automation AI to reach current customers and to get around the database. But when it's about attracting people in, I don't touch it. Not right now. I don't believe it's anywhere near as ready for. It won't benefit what I'm trying to do, I don't believe.
No, I think it's probably for us more room on the candidate side. This idea of building this community and giving them tools to help them with their careers. And again, people don't look for new jobs that often. When they do, it's not very efficient. And so the more we can do through an automation perspective, because it's a mindset, right? It's knowing what you want to go do. It's not looking for a job. It's knowing what you want to go do and then being focused and targeted and going doing and have the right network and tools to do it. So I think there's probably more automation opportunity on the candidate side than on the customer side.
Yeah.
Because you can give a lot of value, I think. And we have a lot of value to give to the candidate side.
So if we brought you back on in a year's time, in early, say, the end of Q1 2025.
Yep.
What would we be saying your business looks like, feels like? What would be different?
Well, look, we're not trying to double in size by next year. I want to have good, measured, manageable growth. I think I got the right team now. Now let's get the team settled in, right? The right people in the right seats. So I think we're almost there. I think that's a pretty key part. As I mentioned, continue to move up the value chain from a strategic customer level. Like, I want to be a year from now, I want my customers, my top 10 customers, to just count on us and to rely on us and to use us to help them reach their kind of strategic goals, not just recruiting goals.
Yeah.
I think a year from now, if we stay focused on this and keep adding value and tracking our customers and learning about them and understanding them, I think we'll be there. And I think that's an important milestone where you can say with confidence that my top 10 customers really count on me. I think that's where we want to be. Then I want to be doing business with a couple of private equity firms, because I think that we have so much value to give the private equity firms beyond the status quo they're using right now. Those are press suits, good handshakes, but they don't know the industry like we do. I think for the PE firms that are playing in the government contracting space, we got a lot of value to give beyond recruiting, beyond finding CXOs.
Jake, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, man.
Really, really interesting conversation. I think you know, what you've built is impressive, seriously impressive. I love it's a refreshing approach, you know. You remind me of a few other people I know that came from industry, almost fell into the creating their own firm. I think that naivety at times of not having done it before is a good thing.
Yeah.
You're not coming in with the scars and the negativity of old colleagues. You're genuinely passionate about what you're doing. I think sometimes recruiters are burnt out by the time they launch their own companies or they go and work, and then they don't have that passion. You've got that, which is really evident. If anyone's listening and thinks, I'd love to speak to that guy just about anything you've mentioned today, is it okay if they give you a note on LinkedIn and reach out and...
Yeah, shoot me a note on LinkedIn. When I first started this, there was this guy, he's in Dubai, He'd been a headhunter. He'd been a customer. I've been a customer of his. And I reached out to him. I said, "Hey, I'm setting up this thing." I said, "You got 30 minutes to talk?" He said, "I only do things that generate revenue." I'm like, "Really? You're not going to give me 30 minutes? I used to be your customer." He's like, "Nope, I'm busy. I got my head down." I'm like, "Okay." I give a lot of time because I believe it comes around. And
yeah,
I think that that's always stuck in my head. And I don't know what that guy's doing now, but I'm in it for the long run. I like helping people. I mean, from teenagers to four-star generals, I love helping.
Mate, I'm totally on board. I literally spent half an hour in the car last Friday driving, speaking to a 21-year-old recruitment owner who's got no money and he's struggling and he doesn't know whether he should own his own firm. And I just gave him half an hour while I was driving and told him what I thought he should do. And he told me he's going to do it. Like, I don't really, you know, my opinion is my opinion, but yeah, I think that's really short-sighted.
Yeah.
Really short-sighted.
Yeah. Really short-sighted. I'm not that guy. I got a lot of giving to do and I enjoy helping people. So I genuinely do.
Legend. Well, look, we'll tag you in everything. I hope people do reach out. And I'd like to get you back on in whether it's 25 or 26.
Yeah.
And I love the quality approach to your business. I would like to recap in the future and see how you're getting on.
Great. Hey, thanks for having me, Sean, and thanks for everything Hoaxo does, all right? You guys are having a big impact.
That's the plan.
All right, buddy.
Thank you, as always, for listening to today's show. I truly hope that you got value from it. Honestly, it's the only reason I take time every week to ensure that my audience, you guys, future and existing recruitment owners, you're learning from each other to make this industry that I love so much stronger. And today's episode is brought to you by my business, Hoaxo. I'm the CEO and founder, and we're on a mission to help brand recruitment agencies and their people better. I want to help people have the tools to stand out in the most competitive markets in the world. We're currently working with over 350 recruitment agencies and 5,000 of their consultants right now, helping them to build their personal brands, to consistently win more business, attract talent, and just become that go-to recruiter in the market. Now, we do have a huge coaching program, but a lot of people don't know we also manage the brands of a lot of founders, and we can do the rebrand of that company organizational piece as well. So if your recruitment agency either needs help to look and sound exactly how you want it to, or your leadership and consultant level need to get out there and drive more traffic back to that website, to the business, and start using LinkedIn to generate more revenue, then you should definitely be reaching out to us. If that sounds of interest, please do visit www.hoaxomedia.com or drop me, Sean, a personal message on LinkedIn. I love hearing from RAG listeners. I would love to talk to you. Look forward to it. So I'll see you again next week with another episode. Catch you soon.